Welcome to the PowerPack Conversation Series, where we calibrate coherent conversations with high achievers. My name is Sheridan Pollack. I'm a Master Executive Coach, and it's my great honor today to engage with no other than the wealth chef, Anne Wilson.
And it is such an honor to be having these juicy, wealthy conversations with you.
Thank you. I love the word juicy. We're going to get back to that without a doubt. So, Anne, let's just start off by giving some context. I've been working with you over the last few months, a wonderfully rich and nuanced program, coaching around coherence, the calibration of coherence, how the sum of the parts come together. Perhaps you can just share one or two of the highlights in terms of your sense of coherence, the definition around coherence for you, what your understanding of this quality of coherence is.
It's firstly just been such a joy working with you and having someone with your skill set being able to be that reflector, that mirror, that wing person, that blind spot pointer outer. Certainly for me, at a stage in my life where I've got this privilege of being able to really drop into what do I want to experience in this exquisite thing called life and what do I want to get from it, having maybe a lot of the foundational elements of money, wealth, certain levels of achievement, and in this real beautiful side of what do I want and what is enough. So for me, what have really evolved and what coherence has become, and as a barometer to come to it, as a lived experience, I can feel that coherence when there's this beautiful openness in me day to day, moment by moment experience, where I feel I'm able to receive the exquisite, sometimes excruciating beauty of being alive. Can I be fully present? And that, can I be open? Can I receive all of that?
So it's so interesting. I mean, you're referring to a couple of vertebrae that are part of the coherence model that we've worked with. And we'll get into that a little bit later, just for purpose of the listeners. That's a wonderfully rich piece of work, which you've really engaged with in your usual high voltage, high humored, intelligent way. And we'll touch on that later. But at this point, what you're highlighting is the idea of receptivity, being able to receive and therefore occupy the present moment and engage with what is happening. So the idea that coherence is the sum of the parts coming together in an optimal way, and your expression at this stage of saying, well, if I'm not in the present moment, if I can't receive, how can I possibly enjoy the benefits of coherence? The parts must come together in a way where I can receive them. So receptivity being a distinction and powerful word to center yourself around.
Absolutely. And really starting understanding, and in that lived experiential way, that for the feeling aspect of what does receptivity mean, I was about to say reciprocity, but that's an interesting slip. And being able to receive, and the spaciousness. And so, you know, I mentioned the word being in the present moment is used so much. And I think a lot of people can try and use meditation or practices or mantras to be in the present moment. But I've really starting to experientially feel, and through our coaching and using a lot of this languaging, what does that coherence mean? That am I open to receive? Because I can, you know, do the work intellectually to go, oh, I'm in the present moment, you know, or, you know, noting that's a thought, whatever it is, you know, whatever modality is trying to use. But I think a key aspect for me in this chapter has been dropping deeper and deeper into my body. And so understanding feeling and being in that, versus just thinking about the thoughts of feelings. And so this also talks about pace. And so often, you know, the word of going slow doesn't resonate for me. So it's more about deeper so that more can absorb. And we've discussed in one of our sessions where we've spoken about the being, myself, being so tight, moving at such a pace. It's almost like a concrete block, a concrete paved over the land. Nothing, whatever you put on it can land. So you can have all the money. You can have the successful business. You could have people around you. If I'm so tight.
Yes.
Using an analogy of your rain on land.
Yes.
If it's so hard baked, all that concrete is laid over, nothing can absorb in.
Yes, great distinction.
So there's no nourishment. You can't absorb anything from there. And so what are the practices for me of spaciousness to be able to be receptive? So physically,
yes,
practices of yoga, of breath, of body work. And it's not some sort of woo-woo, well, let's go and get relaxed and go to the spa.
Agreed.
No, it's a real practice of going, ah, is my body physically able to receive?
Yes.
Can my lungs take in that breath? Can my digestion take in that food? And it's been a beautiful practice and just deepening in my work around money and wealth and what does it mean to actually be and experience wealth,
yes,
life, as opposed to having money,
yes,
or even assets and investments, to receive the gift of resources. And what does that mean?
Lovely. So in our conversations, it's been so wonderful to engage with you in a way where your expertise around wealth and being and living wealth and my expertise around the vertebrae, the components that make up coherence, us coming into a far more coherent and therefore potent state. In a sense, we've been mirroring distinctions. You know, you'll finish my sentences and vice versa. But it's, let's be frank, it's come over 20 plus years of experiencing human beings going through the great discomfort of being incoherent and having blind spots and limitations in the way that we think around the very example of pace. Harder, faster is better. Yeah, generating all of this, but we actually don't have the presence of mind and spaciousness to receive.
Completely. And it's been my journey on many layers.
Yes.
Just around the financial aspect.
Yes.
And wealth has been having to, you know, peel back the layers of the story we're told about what does financial success mean? What does it mean to be wealthy? Where we also almost habituated and told to worship at the altar of inflow.
Right.
Of income.
Yes.
Income becomes the, how do I get more income? If I just had more money, then I'll be okay. Then I'll be safe. Then I'll be able to be happy. Then I can be, do the things I want to do. Yet pursuing income means we neglect assets.
Yes.
And building the foundational elements that can actually work. We neglect, using the metaphor again of the ground, planting the tree that can grow.
Yes.
And then on a work and career aspect of the reward, and you use the lovely words, you know, what do you get your gold stars from? The gold stars from exhaustion, the one who can produce more and last longer and outdo everybody, you know, 20 odd years building large railways and infrastructure around the world, mostly the only female in the side. Noticing, where are those useful tools? But if that becomes my way of being, the depletion of that.
Yes.
So this parallel between money as a resource, behaviors, and then what is the lived experience I want, and noticing that gap and going, that similar side.
Agreed.
We've spoken about, you know, that first vertebra, the base of what do we want to feel. And in even just money and finance, say to people, the first level, you want to feel financially safe. Am I just going to be safe? People, no. When they think about what is to be wealthy, we'll go, it means I've got lots of money to spend. I can go on, you know, fly first class and have endless holidays. Go, well, if you can't feel safe, and if you don't know what it feels like to feel safe in yourself and with the resources around you in order to feel safe, you can be on endless first-class flights for the rest of your life and still never, ever feel wealthy.
Got it. So what you're describing is that first and second vertebrae, the first vertebrae that has women and men align with coherence, understanding and identifying what I most want to feel and having that be the key motivator versus just relying on grit and discipline to arrive at our goals. This idea of being orientated around that which I want to feel more of, being a very potent motivator to align us. And actually something more authentic. For example, if someone's chasing money, but they don't realize that safety is the key feeling, they might over-engineer a certain aspect around money at the expense of others.
No? Yes.
Got it.
Completely. And I think you bring that through so beautifully about really understanding the power of it, truly felt emotion as actually key motivators. And we need to get really clean and clear on that, because I think if we don't, the patterns and what we create.
Understand. Just for the purpose of our listeners, to tie these two together, there's this idea, vertebrae number 5 of the coherence model. When we work out what enough is along the way, we can actually pause, be present to that win, and celebrate it. As opposed to enough being the long race and living an unsatiated life along the way, hoping and waiting and longing for that one day when we will have enough. So, and what you're referring to is, once we figure out what enough is along the way, we can come into the present moment and remain spacious to celebrate along the way. And, you know, it's beautiful. As always, you have this really high-level way of processing emotions and being beautifully spontaneous. Often I pause and go, wow, look at that. She just lets the emotions just come. She's like a river. It's a very, very powerful somatic ability that you have to just free flow with what comes up for you in the way you've just described the correlation between spaciousness and working out what enough is. You also make mention of, you know, there's a process along the way. If you don't have basic safety, how can you start to think about being powerful? So what do I want to feel most first? And then I can build from there.
Absolutely. And so, and I think also allowing ourselves to loop back in, because sometimes we need to drop back. There's some deep foundational aspects of life, whether it's managing our money, our investments. I think there's core elements that, and instead of it being a judgmental thing, I've really sort of worked with you that the self-compassion, the kindness, with going, it's an ecosystem, and I'm moving my hands around. And if you describe going around in circles, I think we can also be caught in not only the obsession at the altar of income, but that also wealth, success, a life well lived is some linear journey of ticking off tick boxes. Now I've got that. Now it's the next thing. And so there's this endless climbing a mountain. But it's far more ecosystem, far more circular, and coming back and checking in. Where's my safety? Where's my creativity? Where's my power base as these expanding circles?
Yes.
And that as that next, as I've certainly for myself, as my wealthy life has expanded, both my net worth, but my experience of my life, my ability to receive and contain just vast wonder and abundance and joy and experiences and elephants and everything else. You know, I do have an extraordinary gift now that I'm able to receive vast, just amazingness of life.
So the idea of repeat cycles, richer, more intelligent, more wise cycles, revisiting distinctions as filters of upgrading my way of being versus this linear approach to success. Sure. And that speaks to your nuanced and very experienced view and work around wealth as the wealth chef. Because as we all know, we head on our 40s plus, I'll speak for myself, that we do revisit distinctions on a deeper level in accordance with our consciousness and our experience and our courage to really look and say, well, how helpful is this idea around enough for me? Have I visited it? What can I bring to this conversation this time around? So let's pan out. Let's go satellite. I use the word of satellite, more optics on ourselves, on our businesses. We're having quite a tank conversation.
Yeah.
Metaphorically, we're going right in there in some of the vertebrae that make up this notion of coming into a state of coherence. Let me ask you about your runway as a wealth chef. So you are very accomplished. You've had some great runways in terms of exposure to the market. The market's been beautifully receptive. I've actually heard about you over the years. It's quite interesting, and yet we've never met. And then we get to work together. But give the listeners an understanding of where you're moving from and where you're moving to in terms of this exciting launch that's coming up, the product that you're exposing to the market now, and where you, as someone pretty nuanced in the space, is wanting to hang out more.
Love it. Thank you. So the key driver and motivation for the Whale Chef was really about going, how do I provide a set of skills, tools, exposure to add to and give people a set of resources to actually create real sustainable wealth?
Yes.
Real and sustainable and wealth, as opposed to a brief sugar spurt of feeling rich for a moment. They're fundamentally different things. And not just at some sort of mindset concept, but as a lived experience. Money weaves through every aspect of our life. So as a very practical set of skills of how do you actually manage your money? How do you notice, do you have, you know, flow through patterns? What's actually going on with your spend? How to behaviorally be with it, plus practical tools to have more. And then how do you invest? How do you create assets? Do you even know what they are if we've just always taught to earn? And that came from my own journey of really going, hey, if I want to be fully in life, but I'm constantly either anxious and stressed around it, don't feel safe, or endlessly have to churn, then I don't have the, coming back to that spaciousness, I don't have the energy, I don't have the space, I don't have the choice to be with my ailing parent when I want to, or attend that kid's thing, or go and experience life. I can't experience life, so I can't be available.
So, Anne, I'm quite curious. I see you make a distinction between the term wealthy and rich. And, I'm just dying to hear how you understand and package those two distinctions. I'm assuming that we often collapse them, that that's your take.
And so rich versus wealthy. My goal is for everyone to live and experience a deeply wealthy life. But wealth is often what we don't see. And whereas rich, in my definition, is what we do see and often is what is perceived as wealthy. But it can lead to the highly consumptuous life and depletion and ensure we never create wealth.
Yes.
If we believe what wealth is being rich. So it's easy to be rich in 5 minutes. You can go, if you've got access to credit, you can go and get a whole lot of debt. You can buy a whole lot of stuff, shove it in and go, people are like, oh, look, they're rich. You can go and spend money and get to hire a Ferrari for an hour and go up and down the high street and people go, oh, you're rich. So for me, there's nothing wrong with wanting rich experiences.
Yes.
Those consumptive things.
Yes.
You know, I love nice stuff.
Decadence.
Bit of bling, bit of decadence, whatever label you want. But if we believe that that is going to give us sustainability.
Yes.
And the freedom of choice and opportunity and safety and ability to live life fully.
Mm-hmm.
This is where most people just end up in this depletion cycle of spending. It's a bit like a sugar rush.
Yes. Yes.
Whereas wealthy and the habits that create wealth are the things that aren't seen. Wealthy is the money that isn't spent, and it's the money that instead gets converted into assets.
Understood.
Wealthy is that pause and that decision of, I'm going to spend this money now. Does this really serve me? And how do I get the nourishment from that? Is it aligned to what I really want? Wealthy is having that cash safety net and not always living on that financial edge. So wealthy is also beautifully boring. And I often say, you know, boring
that's
is beautiful.
That's interesting.
Because it's not the stuff that's going to, no one's going to notice it. No one's
necessarily
going to go, wow, find sexy. But the irony is the deep-seated base of wealth, of assets and just the structural side, investments, assets that can work and grow without us having to work. The wealthy aspects of the habits we have of making sure there's always a bit more money, about having safety nets, about having protection in place, then allows us to actually live a sexier, juicier life. That's the paradox. But if we can focus on creating wealth, that allows us to have more of the rich stuff.
Got it. So
but most people go after rich and never create wealth.
Got it. So you're describing then that wealth is a coherence view of one's resources. It's looking in a coherent way at all your resources versus the fast accumulation.
And our actions around those resources, very aware of how we spend them, our time, our energy, our money. And how we're spending those, are they creating things that can keep serving us?
Mm.
Or are they one-hit wonder, sugar rush hits?
Fantastic. Very powerful distinction. I'm sure it'll follow through in your work and material, especially what you're about to launch now in July. So I look forward to watching the space around that distinction. I think if I just reflect on my own client base, this distinction is a very powerful one. So thank you for that.
So the first chapter of The Wealth Shift is very much putting together a body of work around managing money, getting out of debt, investing, understanding these five pillars of a wealthy life, the practical components, and who do we need to be in our relationship with how we spend.
You know,
I'll use the word, how do we be a wealthy spender, which also means how do we actually receive the nourishment from the things we spend our money on? Or are we just moving so fast and thinking just more and more and more will finally get us there, but we depleted because we don't actually chew the cud.
Yes.
We don't chew our damn food. But in every aspect, the experiences we have, the holiday, the clothes, whatever it is, do we use it? So this has been a vast body of work, and it's been a beautiful journey. And that is what the core of The Wealth Shift is still about. They're practical skills we have to have, plus the behavioral elements. And that is in there. And so I've just spent time. I've had a beautiful sort of 2 years of just percolating, giving myself time to really consider these. And I've just upgraded a lot of the content, just the languaging, making it sharper, cleaner. How do people receive the teaching?
Yes, lovely.
In a more succinct way.
Lovely.
And a refreshing. And so this is now being released and being launched out in the same modality, digital delivery, which is fantastic. But also to give me the spaciousness for this next level of conversation, right? And just the lovely, juicy sumptuousness of contemplating wealth, contemplating the responsibility and custodianship that comes with financial abundance.
Another one, just thinking out the box, regret. The idea of potentially, is it too late? Is it too late for me? There's been so much change on the planet, depending on what country you're in, pick your basket, but there's certainly been change all around. In my experience, I often find people slightly flat or pausing, deeply reflective and without answers to, is it too late? What would your response to such a person be?
Is it too late for me to live the life that I want, to create real sustainable wealth, to invest, to have a different future, is just a theme tune that I hear played out by people, whether they're 20, 40, 60. And so I think it's far more of a behavioral construct than an age reality thing. And I think one of the big challenges that comes with too late, and why I think a lot of people believe it's too late, because they're seeing the ability to live a certain way linked to a specific destination.
Yes.
And not understanding, how do you live wealthy whilst you're building up that asset base? How do you get in alignment with your right size life? Not a lesser life, but get really clear about what do I want, and realizing that we can live that whilst we're journeying to that destination. But I also think, I've left it too late, is an acceptable excuse to self-betray. It's a devastating excuse, but I think there's three excuses in life that society loves and where we all have this, we all just don't go there. I don't have the time, I don't have the money, and it's too late.
Got it.
And everyone goes, oh, yeah, yes, that's so true. But they devastating because they just these deep, because we don't challenge them and then no activities come in. But if we really go, well, if I truly get, I've got this one glorious, amazing life, you know, whatever, you know, anyone listener's belief is, great. If you believe there's something after here, I'm not going to take that risk. Maybe if there is something after this, bonus, but hey, I'm going to live this one. I'm going to hope there's something else. So, well, then if I'm starting to feel it's too late, then what do I need to do to make it different? Because just running that song is not going to change it. It's just going to perpetuate that. But I often say to people, really decide whether you want to go on this wealthy journey.
Yeah, so clarity and quality along the way.
Yeah.
As opposed to reverting to excuses.
Yeah.
Lovely. So that clarifies quite a bit. I'm assuming a lot of what you're offering in terms of your programs is a focus on that clarity and quality, practical focus on clarity and quality along the way.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things when firstly you're going to say, you know, people say, oh, you want to be wealthy. Yes, you want more money. You want financial freedom. One of the first things is to get clear, well, what specifically does that mean?
Yes.
What the bleep do you want? But what does that mean? Not just as a, you've got to go, what is that feeling? I want to feel safe. What are these layers of emotional experience? But what does that mean practically? Because say, I want more money. What? Another dollar? A million? What is that? And one of the reasons most people never create financial freedom and actually have real sustainable wealth, they've got no idea what their financial freedom number is.
Yes.
So the very first thing we start with, and we have to get clear on, is what do you want?
Yes.
And what's the price tag of that life?
Yes.
Once you know the price tag of it, also just get clear that it is actually the one you want, not what your parents or society or your partner or the magazine said you should want, because each thing's got its own price tag. Because now you've got the price tag. Now you can get really specific. What do you need in terms of assets and investments? That specificity gives you something to work with.
Yes.
Without that, it's just a wishy-washy. You don't know what to invest in. You don't know how much. Now we come back to the how much is enough.
Got it. Got it. So actually in your programs, you're going to start by percolating, by sieving.
Yeah.
By asking a pivotal question up front that's going to steer the remainder of the process in the program.
Absolutely. And the tools and the just the practical, how do you work that out?
Yes.
It actually is a number. Each of us have a number. Boonk. And that's ours.
Lovely.
You've got to know your friggin' number.
Lovely. I'm going to share my number with you after this podcast and you can tell me what you think.
But with it also comes often questions that I'm have the privilege to now grapple with. What does, where does the responsibility of having abundant wealth financially? You know, let's not talk about boohoo. Yeah, this is, I have a great net worth that I can choose never to work again in my life. I've got assets that work for me. I can live the lifestyle I want, free of financial stress and anxiety intellectually.
Yes.
But interesting noticing where some of those patterns still come in. Why do they come in? And what does that mean now in terms of contribution? What is a right-sized life in terms of the life I choose to live? How does that align to me and the earth and nature without collapsing into shame for having too much?
Yes.
Where does contribution come in? And so these are the conversations that I'm wanting to be having more of.
So thank you for the beautiful language. There was three or four sentences there, which I'm going to circle back on. It's just too good not to. But just for the listener to summarize, and for the listeners out there, this is really much a conversation. This is really a conversation that Anne and I are curating because it is a nuanced one. The idea that you can generate wealth, you can be winning in your life intellectually, but when you check in on your levels of coherence, who you are operating as inside yourself, in a society, in a community, we often inconveniently notice that we are incoherent. We may lack spaciousness. We may not have worked out what enough is. We might not be in touch with what we genuinely, deeply are longing to feel. So there's this system of checks for those that have reached a certain state of wealth that they can maintain quite comfortably to go next level with. And this, to me, is the space that you are wanting to contribute to have high-level discussions with men and women in business around to say, guys, we're operating at a level. How responsible and clear can we be around our own coherence levels before we enter the complexity around how do we contribute? How can we be a custodian? My question is, if we're going to be custodians, we need to check our own coherence first to see that we're contributors, not contaminators, because of the lack of it.
I love, love, love that word, contributors, not contaminators. Oh, and it is. It's so nuanced and subtle, but it is. It's this coherence. And for me, a huge part of that is going, for me to even know and be able to say, hey, am I coherent now? I've had to really watch pace. So pace of output, but pace of consumption as well, of input both ways, of allowing spaciousness to actually, for me to be able to absorb, notice, and get that spaciousness or that just perspective
yes.
of, from whence am I coming from?
Hmm.
Because anything in itself is neutral. It's a bit like tofu. Money's tofu. You know, we add the flavor to it.
I didn't know you were a fan of tofu.
Not at all. I like the flavor you can add. And this is what's also, can we also allow money and wealth to be as bland as tofu? But we own that we bring that flavor.
Sure.
So that bitterness or that contaminator to it. It's neutral. And I love what you've just said, that, and I'm really just chewing on that as
yes.
my brain's just loving that model. Because if we're coming from depletion or anxious, then and now we're going, I'm going to contribute or I'm going to make a difference, you know, poverty or whatever. If it's coming from us not feeling enough and an attempt to seek worthiness or an attempt to seek validation or an attempt to seek fulfillment through that, as opposed to it coming from already being full, complete enough, as an expression of that coherence.
Yes, agreed. Now let's pan out. Let's go north to the bush, because you, for the listeners, Annie's building an incredibly beautiful space, and if you're lucky enough, you may have the opportunity to pitch up there. I certainly will be on the waiting list.
Absolutely.
And the nuance here is that Anne and I are both building homes at the same time. So there's a bit of cross-pollination in terms of the pace and rhythm of that. Mm. It's both a great metaphor as well as a real story around how do we carve out ecosystems that support us to remain coherent? And therein, how can we be custodians of those spaces down the line? Maybe share with the listeners a little bit about your project and your intentions for the space, as well as the way the space has impacted you and your coherence.
Mm. This whole project has been a beautiful experience and experiment in almost this next level of enough, but also trusting.
Hmm.
So there's also been this alignment and coherence with myself, my own evolution of a wealthy life in coming out of discipline and pragmatism around sensibility, around looking after my money, being a good custodian of it, as in not being wasteful, growing it, protecting my money from me. I always laugh about that.
Yeah, I do find that quite funny. We actually need to get into that at some point.
And for as long as I can remember, the African bush, wildlife, that vast expansiveness, this beautiful place where these exquisite animals live, has been a place where I've been able to find coherence easier.
Yes.
Where the noise of life and myself has dropped down. And there's an exquisite honesty of life.
Mm.
It's not all unicorns farting flowers.
Yes.
It's brutal, but it's clean and it's amazing and it's wondrous.
Mm.
But long story short, ended up finding this place in the middle of the Kruger Park, Big Five, open system, no fences. You've got, you know, elephants and baboons and lions wandering through the backyard. And suddenly realizing this was a build project.
Yes.
And going, I hadn't realized that's where I was going next, but hey, and embracing it. But so there's been so many beautiful aspects of lessons around this project, which I am loving. So besides just this extraordinary environment and allowing the environment to be spacious, to also not overfill it, overcluster it, let the environment talk, allowing the rhythm of life, you know, there rising with the sun, noticing a day.
That's a beautiful description how you've been calibrating key aspects or components to come together for you specifically around this area is around a different pace. Quite frankly, there's different rules too.
Yeah.
Nature doesn't, it's not too concerned if Anne's doing yoga on the deck. If the elephant wants to walk by, and by the way, for the listeners, there's such beautiful footage, which maybe Anne would share with her community. So maybe to have a look into that of Anne engaging with wildlife there. But the aspect of pace and having to edit her pace to accommodate an ecosystem, to bring herself into coherence, to actually receive the space, and then staying committed to what you most want to feel out of creating the space, honoring that regardless of setbacks and, you know, left and right wing aspects that come in unexpected. Beautiful.
So beautifully put.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and I love what you've just reflected back. Absolutely. And maybe that's why I find the bush so generous, because yes, the animals don't. Yeah. The pace piece is so beautiful, I think. And I really am, for me, an element of this next chapter of my deep, wealthy life is noticing the story and the habituation of pace.
Yes.
And almost the judgment I have around it.
Got it.
Of spaciousness as a, either being indulgent or lazy or shameful.
Mm.
And so that's been beautiful just to sort of notice that. And as I say, when I'm stuck on top of my gym/yoga deck because there's a herd of elephants around me, and so I end up doing a 2-hour yoga session because I ain't coming down on that roof. You know, it doesn't matter what else I've got scheduled, and going, the world hasn't fallen apart yet. Mm. And it doesn't make me a lazy person.
Got it.
Been so key.
But let's make this distinct for the listener, because in my programs that I'm running with very senior people in industry. So you would think at a senior level that this would be sorted. And this particular topic is not sorted. It's an area of growth that is constant. The distinction between pace, speed, and then the quality of the experience. So one can always be hard and fast, intense, but at the expense of what?
Mm.
How can we pan out and stretch deliverables, but have more quality along the way? And therefore, what state do we arrive in? Are we in a better, coherent, more intelligent state where we're able to execute in an advanced way in comparison to having been intense and speedy, but not being coherent and therefore not as well equipped to execute to our full capacity? So you're describing and using this, you know, this lovely example of the bush and your beautiful energy around how you've had to coach and moderate yourself in this way. And it's because you've got to the stage where you have generated wealth, but you're now in the question of how do I make it count?
Yeah.
Got it.
And you've just put that so beautifully there. And I think I've already mentioned, there's a few words that can trigger me, and it's so hysterical. Like, people go, you know, and you need more balance, or you need to go slower. And I'm like,
sure.
Bleep, bleep, bleep you. You know, don't use those swear words at me in life. And I do have a story. And it's okay. I can laugh about that, because I think also deeply getting incoherent of who am I?
Yes.
And you've so beautifully reflected back to me that my coherence around pace is rejuvenation time, rest times, fast pace. It's not that constantly living life at one vibration, one speed. You know, that would just blow my brains out.
Sure.
But having this coherence and this awareness, again, back in my body, what am I feeling?
Yes. Yes.
Ah, there's a pacing of now I want to drop deeper. Mm. So often instead of going slow, I go, oh, I want to drop deeper here.
Sure. The word I often use is how much of what and when in service of what. So it's having the options available to you, because from a point of coherence where the parts of us are coming together better than at other times, we're able to distinguish and discern what kind of pace we need when, as opposed to the traditional, very much 90s model around harder, faster, one pace. Yeah.
And we have this often, this sort of parallel with what I love to teach around money and wealth.
Yes.
There's a direct correlation with spending and consumption.
Mm.
That often this thought of being wealthy or being rich is just spending lots of money. Big outflow or consuming. Mm. So we can also get habituated in the hard and fast of the 90s of success, of always being busy and never on the go, that wealthy is just having more endlessly, you know, the bigger house, the bigger car, the more the wardrobe, this 13 handbags or whatever that side is. And that wealthy is this almost habitual spend, the bigger holiday, the next holiday, the longer one.
Got it.
But this depletion and almost the starvation that can happen with almost this binging that never slows down to allow any nourishment to come in. And when we talk about one of the areas that I've encouraged people to look at well, not don't encourage, tell them they have to bloody look at it in terms of the different components of being great with their money is the outflow.
Yes.
And often people think, oh, the Anne's now telling me about frugality and I mustn't spend money on anything that I want and it must all be, you know, dry crackers and.
Got it. They assume.
And go, if we truly understand that, one, we've fixated on income, we think that's going to solve our problem. Mm. So we fixate on inflow, that's bringing more in, sure. And we often neglect the outflow.
Got it.
Often outflow is reactive. It's just in responding to advertising, to what we think we should do, or just neglectful. But our wealthy life is created by where we exchange our money and what we exchange it for and the pace at which we exchange it. If we can bring more coherence and spaciousness and what do we want to feel, just using your languaging, to our spend choices, we really get to see, this is where creation is happening.
Mm.
This is where I'm modeling and creating my lived experience and what's going to be happening in my future, including, you know, do I now go into debt because I believe I have to spend money I don't have in order to be good enough or fit in?
Mm.
Do I just spend it all on consuming? Does some of that money go into assets to plant those seeds and grow?
Mm.
But also the money that does flow out and is exchanged, of those things or experiences that I exchange money for, how much value am I getting?
Yes.
How much life? How much joy? How much juiciness?
I've on purpose not delved too much into your work because it would then have me have a subjective view on your content where I wanted to experience you fresh off the cuff. But this language that you give around how we exchange our money, that's very, very powerful. Maybe give us an idea in terms of your launch that's about to happen in July now, 2022, and in terms of some of the content, what can the listeners expect in terms of guidelines, street signs, direction around how we exchange our money? You've mentioned this distinction around pace. So in other words, if we don't come into a even-keeled pace, we won't have awareness of how we're exchanging our money.
Mm.
It might be unconscious or borrowed. Maybe just give us some teasers, if you can, of what the listeners can expect.
Well, in this sort of signature program, this deep sort of training that I'm launching, I've just redone, which is called Financial Freedom University, there are five core foundational pillars of wealth that we need to have. We need to have leadership and management.
You know? Got it.
If we don't know what the bleep we want, old road will do.
Yep.
You know, if we don't know what we want, how do we direct money? Yes. And then how do we have systems and processes to actually tell our money what we want? So most people just neglect it.
Sure.
Then there's this aspect around being a wealthy spender. So really getting clear on what we exchange it for. And a lot of it comes back to we've got to come slow down enough to know what the bleep we want.
Agreed.
The courage and the safety.
Sure.
To almost sit with the truth that we're all freaks.
Thanks very much.
Exactly. But I've had a drop in to go, it's okay. My blend of what I want from my life is my freaky, weird blend.
Sure.
It's mostly not going to be what the magazines say wealthy life is.
Sure.
And so the safety and the courage to drop in and owning that then also deeply reflects what we exchange our money for. Because this unconscious or this depletion spend is so often related to what we think we should have, our parents or our society. So this inner game, but then just practical tools of how do we automate the things that are generative for us and how do we make manual the things that aren't. So how do we also put behavioral stops in place to help us be to notice what's going on. Whereas unfortunately our society and so many of the things are created to automate our depletion spend.
Yes.
You know, that one click upsell, that you know, your automatic payment card shoved on your Amazon if you've got a habitual, you know, e-commerce spend versus so how yet most people make their investing manual.
Mm.
So every single time they've got to go through, is there enough? Can I, you know, what if I run out? Or maybe next month I'll save, next month I'll invest because I just might need that. And so they go through these contorted, agonizing scarcity conversations instead of making this deep decision once and for all, going, me and my freedom and my coherence and my safety and my well-being is my number one priority.
Sure.
So let me automate my spend decisions, just appreciating that, yes, we're not logical creatures. So how do I put my investing on autopilot? How do I make that decision once properly and then put my systems and process in place to support
it. So what you really
describe. So we invert those.
Okay, got it. So and it's lovely to hear now in detail. So the way I understand what you're sharing is the quality of exchange, taking agency of that exchange, the efficiency of the exchange, and these practical examples that you offer in this next body of work around.
And then with that, understanding that a key part of that exchange of our resources, our time, and very definitely our money needs to go into things that are going to serve us, specifically assets. So getting investing. And this is an era where when we come to contribution, relationship with the enoughness of life is a huge barrier for people, often is a huge win then. When the kids are sorted, then I'll look after myself. When the business is making more money, then I'll start investing. When? And the challenge is money and assets need time to let compounding work. So often people, they never plant that proverbial tree because it's always another thing. But it takes courage and enough to go, one, it takes agency. I'm important.
Yes.
It takes it. Really getting clear that I'm no use to anybody if I'm an empty, dried out sack.
Sure.
And that the greatest gift I can give to anybody I love is my own financial well-being.
Yes.
You know, the terrifying statistic across both developed and developing societies, 2 out of 3 people will at a point in their life have to depend on somebody else for their financial well-being. And I'm not talking about kids. As adults. This is the truth, is the reality. So when people are going, well, it's loving to give and I want to contribute, and whether it's to their adult kid that they've got a codependent issue with on economic outpatient care, or whether it's, you know, I'm feeling so overwhelmed by poverty that I just don't want to have, and so not being able to sit and go, my most important priority is to make sure that I am creating my own financial well-being, which means investing, keeping some of that money, now learning what does it mean to go into the stock market, investment practically, how do you do it? And putting that in place, that as the most generative gift we can give to life.
Lovely.
And others.
Lovely.
And then going, we've got to learn those skills. So that's that next aspect of understanding how to do it. We're not taught how to invest.
Sure.
We're not taught how to grow assets. And then go, creating that base, that's now going to give me the well that will keep replenishing, that then I can contribute, that then I can you know, be of service. But of course, this what you talk so beautifully about the train stations. Of course, in that journey there, it's also not waiting until you've got your financial freedom net worth in place that you finally enjoy life.
Sure.
It's how do you have the enough steps all along the way.
Lovely. So you're describing foundational responsibility and accuracy around wealth generation and the exchange of wealth in this program.
Yeah.
Okay. Fascinating.
And, you know, then the sort of fourth aspect is protection.
Yes.
And also just being, there's a lovely saying, I have no idea where it's from, but trust in Allah, but tie up your camels.
Sure. You know? Again, you can email annwilson.com.
And, you know, there's this beautiful trust in life, have faith, be open. But we've also got to participate in our own rescue, you know, paddle towards that damn thing.
Sure.
And life's to be unexpected events need to be expected.
Yes.
And so just the practicality of what do insurances look like? Wills, powers of attorney, these practical things. A lot of people say, oh, Amber, I think we're talking about wealth. I'm going, yes, we are. Because we need to, there's these layers of protection that just form a container that helps us then be free.
Lovely. Yeah. Yeah. So
what are those involved? And then ultimately, how do we bring this whole piece, the who we are, the self-mastery, And really getting that wealthy as a way of being,
yes,
not a destination.
Lovely. So being you actually encouraging a real comprehensive look and upgrade around both how one views one's wealth, how one generates and spends one's wealth, you use the word exchange, and then this added component of whilst one is doing that, how coherent and self-aligned, self-responsible are you as a way of understanding, well, in service of what kind of state do we want to arrive at this wealthy place in?
Yeah.
You know, we can have a good giggle about that because maybe 50% of the people we know are not in great states, maybe particularly wealthy. So it's this humble and humorous look at all of us to say, is it time for an upgrade, folks?
Yeah. And as we're on this journey checking in, and it's so easy for it to drop and sound like these trite little
you know,
Hallmark card phrases, but it really is checking in the whole time. If I'm literally, you know, there's that lovely phrase, you know, I'm living my future's past.
Mm.
If right now I'm building my future, am I building what I want? And that includes me. My physical being.
Yes.
If we arrive at that now, yahoo, got my financial freedom number. I've got my net worth target. My investments are in place and I'm completely disconnected from myself. I've no idea who I am. I'm anxious. My body is messed. I've got no relationships and I have no idea who I am. Well, there's nothing wealthy in that.
Sure. So there's the distinction. That's not actually comprehensive wealth.
No.
Lovely. So I'm curious, as the listeners may have well picked up at this point, Anne has an amazing sense of humor. And if you could see her, she's literally jumping around her chair. Next time we'll have to do a video, Anne. We just can't lose heart on that. Here's my question is, where do you get your bounce and energy and this beautiful capacity and habit of resetting your energy? Because you make quite a significant contribution to anyone you engage with. So I'm witnessing it right now, this podcast. The audience will witness it when we get onto some video at some stage. Where does it come from?
It's such a beautiful question. I'm asked that a lot. I do, you know, be on stages, you know, on television shows. There is that side in that place. And I wish I did have a really clear answer. But I think coming back to spaciousness, but feeling and that embodied somatic side, I know that charge that I get from life, I do feel like I've got some big friggin' cable that somehow got put into me. I think we've all got access to it, but I know that recharge, that charge, that drive is far more available to me and flows and fills me up.
If I can play back to you, the one aspect that I notice, and this is so important when we think of expressing wealth in a coherent way, you're describing embodiment when I become grounded and I check in and I'm the best version of myself. I experience you as being on top form when you express yourself. Mm. When you express yourself, you make a direct contribution to those around you. So it's this combination between how grounded and spacious, how coherent can I become? And then defining how do I want to express myself in this life? And you often present as someone who's loving expressing herself. And those around you really get, you know, a contribution from that. And then I just see this humor pop out and I think she's in her element. There you go. Very lovely.
No, thank you for that. And thank you for that reflection. And something that I've become more aware of and I think is just, you know, we can use a gift or something in it, but I've become a lot more aware of is real hits of life come to me when I can just notice the sheer wonder and joy in the everyday ordinary.
Yes.
And so I think there's a part of me that expects joy.
Mm.
There's an anticipation.
Mm.
And just today, I think I mentioned you driving here, there was traffic lights out and there were these two guys directing the traffic. Very ordinary everyday moment.
Yes.
But I was there and I was attentive to life. I was looking up and out. I think I do look up and out at life. Mm. There's a wonder and an expectation of being delighted.
Yes.
And so often I am. When I meet people, when I see things. And so I watched these guys. One guy had his little ear pods in and he was booging away while directing. And then I watched them together. They were, had this beautiful dance. They were supporting people, helping them drive, you know, creating this beautiful flow of coherence and making sure people didn't end up in this jam. But they were there. They were very aware of each other. I felt this most exquisite just welling. Oh, I'm feeling it again of joy, of life, of delight. And so I did. I wound my window down and I shouted out to the window like, whoa, guys, thank you. But that to me was this exquisite, wealthy moment. It was enough right there.
Got
enough.
It. Got it.
And I think these micro pieces of enough, of delight, of expecting one and letting that be enough, keep these vast batteries of mine topped right up.
Got it. So thank you. So you exchanged your wealth well on your way to your coaching session this morning, if I can use your language.
Yeah.
So I've got to tell you, I mean, you use the word delight. Yes. Yes. You and Wilson are a delight. And I thank you very, very much for sharing this time with me. I've got no doubt we're going to have multiple conversations. So for this first podcast, thank you. And I'm most privileged to be engaging with you and all the richness of distinctions and wisdom that you bring around the creation and expression of wealth. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you for the extraordinary framework and how you create this container. And, well, as a coach, it's just as a receiver of your coaching, it's just an honor and a privilege to have you having my back too.
I'm glad. I'm glad. Let it be so. Thanks, Anne.
Thank you.
To our listeners, thank you for keying in. And we look forward to engaging more in these spaces.